This is Cheryl Prusa from Wealth Development Strategies. Tune in to Let's Talk Money every Friday at noon on Amazing 102.5, where our team of fabulous female advisors will put you in the know on how you can be a financially independent woman. Good afternoon. This is Cheryl Prusa, Managing Partner of Wealth Development Strategies, and welcome to Let's Talk Money. And yes, it's all about becoming an independent woman. For the last several weeks, our fabulous team of female advisors have been talking about the first step to financial independence. That first step is making sure that you have a solid foundation. Building a solid financial future is a lot like building a house. You have to start with a solid foundation. If you build a house on a weak foundation, what happens? Once that foundation cracks, the house begins to deteriorate. So foundation first. Our previous shows, for those that missed them, will be available via podcast as of next week. And we'll give you details on how you can tune in and listen to those previous shows. But let me quickly go over the items in the foundation that must be addressed before we start talking about smart investing, which is our next series. So, the foundation involves, number one, having a budget, which is a bad word to a lot of folks, or a cash flow management program, that sounds better. We all have to know what cash flow-wise we have coming in and what we have going out. And this is true regardless of your income. We have to have some parameters so we know what's available for savings and investment. Next, we have to have some regular and systematic savings plan. First part of that is an emergency fund. As planners, we often hear, I feel like I'm on a constant treadmill. I just set money aside, something happens, and I've got to take money out of my investments. I just don't feel like I can get ahead. So we've got to have that emergency fund for things that are going to happen. And we need 6 to 9 months of your living expenses in case you lose your job, the AC goes out, just whatever the emergency might be. Next is debt retirement. And we see lots of folks that come in with a lot of credit card debt or school debt and ask us if they should accelerate the payment of that debt. So if the cost of the debt is higher than what you can earn, then you need to accelerate the payment of that debt. Next is medical hospitalization insurance. And that is for the obvious, in case we get sick. Property and casualty insurance, which protects the loss of our things, our houses and our cars. And fortunately, unfortunately, most of us will take care of our things before we take care of ourselves. Disability income, for example, ensures our most important asset, which is our ability to get up out of the bed every morning and earn a living. Life insurance is needed in the event that someone dies too soon. Affluent individuals also use life insurance to pay estate taxes, which our guest host is going to talk about soon. Long-term care, because people are living longer. And the cost of long-term care is exorbitant. Long-term care insurance provides money when someone is older to provide care either in their home, an assisted living facility, or in a nursing home. Home ownership is important. and it's probably the biggest portion of someone's net worth. Home ownership is important to build equity, and there are also tax benefits associated with owning a home. Tax planning is also part of one's foundation. For many people, it's done through their financial retirement plans, at work. So for most, that tax planning is done through your 401k, your 403b, or whatever your retirement plan may be at work. For the more fluent, financial planners do more sophisticated planning so that we can further reduce their income taxes and estate taxes as well. And then lastly is the estate planning. And that is the last item of the foundation, is having a will and the ancillary documents that go along with will. And we have a fabulous guest that after the break is going to walk us through why having a will is important. So stay tuned. You don't want to miss this. And we're back. This is Cheryl Cruzeau, Managing Partner of Wealth Development Strategies, and you're listening to Let's Talk Money on Amazing 102.5. We've been talking about estate planning as part of the foundation, and our guest today is Joy McNair of the McNair Law Group, PLLC. Joy says that estate planning and elder law kind of chose her. She has lived the majority of her life in an estate planning environment. Joy unfortunately lost her father at a very early age when her father, Ronald McNair, died on board the Challenger space shuttle during the explosion in 1986. Later, she became the temporary caretaker of her mother after she had emergency brain surgery. So she has firsthand experience in dealing with the complex matters related to planning for someone that's incapacitated and the proper planning that's required for dealing with the inevitable for all of us, death. I must say that there are very few African-American attorneys who specialize in the field of estate planning and elder law, and she is quite an accomplished young lady. Joy went to Spelman for her undergrad studies, then on to Howard University, where she received her law degree, her Juris Doctorate, and she also earned an advanced law degree called an LLM, which is a Master's of Law in Taxation from Georgetown University. I could go on and on because her resume is very, very extensive. So Joy is going to talk to us about estate planning. All of you listeners have the opportunity to ask this expert questions about estate planning, so please give us a call with your questions. Dial us at 1-832-685-1025. Again, that's 1-832-685-1025. So Joy, we're going to jump right in and we have some questions for you. Let's talk about who needs a will.
Okay, well, the short answer is that every adult needs a will regardless of their wealth. But depending on your wealth or your circumstances, maybe you might need more than a will.
Okay, all right. It's funny, in my practice, it's very, very difficult to get people to do a will. It's almost as if they do a will, then they're going to die. Okay?
I hear that a lot.
It's something that is inevitable, and that planning has to be done. So what does a will actually do?
A will serves two purposes. First, it allows you to choose a person that will be responsible for winding up the final chapter of your life. In Texas, that person is called an executor, and they're responsible for gathering your assets and paying off any creditors, any debts that you owe, and then they'll distribute your assets, your property, to your beneficiaries. And also a will allows you to name who your beneficiaries will be, which are simply the people who will receive your assets. And if you don't have a will, they'll just pass according to whatever the state law says.
Okay. You mentioned some other documents. I know most attorneys, as part of preparing the will, will also prepare some other ancillary documents. Describe those and tell us the benefit of having those documents prepared as well.
Absolutely. Well, I always include incapacity documents as well as healthcare and end-of-life type of documents. The first is called a durable power of attorney, and that authorizes a person of your choice to manage your finances in the event that you're incapacitated, that you're not able to manage your finances on your own.
Okay.
The next is a medical power of attorney, and that authorizes the person of your choice to make healthcare decisions for you if you become incapacitated. And then we also include a document called a HIPAA authorization, which is really a medical release that allows your healthcare agents to have access to your healthcare records.
Okay.
And then we also include a living will, or here in Texas it's called a directive to physicians. And that document controls in life-threatening emergencies, and it directs the medical professionals to proceed in the event that you have a terminal illness or an irreversible condition. And it covers things such as whether you want to have life support, resuscitation, artificial hydration, and nutrition. And it's this particular document's incredibly important because it prevents your loved ones from having to make some really difficult decisions, like whether or not to pull the plug. And it's really necessary to avoid any unpleasant experiences that this often causes. And I've often seen families divided if they can't agree on a decision, so it really takes that pressure off.
Right, very, very important. I had a couple in my office this week, and we were going back and forth, and the husband says, "Leave me plugged up." And the wife says, "No, unplug me."
Yes, couples often disagree on which they want, so they get to decide for themselves.
That's right.
And there's one last document that we include is a disposition of remains, and that allows you to instruct whether you'd like to be buried or cremated. A lot of people feel strongly about either position, and so it lets you authorize what your wishes are.
Very important. All right. Can someone write their own will? I get this a lot.
The technical answer is yes, you can take a do-it-yourself type approach, but it's really not advised to do that. It's not a good idea because there's several requirements that must be met for a will to be considered valid. It has to be properly drafted, properly executed, and unfortunately many people don't get it right. They don't follow the necessary steps. And unfortunately there's no second chances if you don't get it right. And also every family's or individual's life and circumstances, as well as their assets, are very unique, and so they need a plan that's specifically tailored to their unique needs instead of taking a one-size-fits-all approach or fill-in-the-blank, which is often what you get from the do-it-yourself or the internet-type documents.
All right, very good. So doing your own will would not be a good idea, even though you can do a holographic or handwritten will.
There are certain requirements to those as well. Texas does acknowledge handwritten wills, but there are certain requirements to those as well that have to be met.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. Give us a call with your questions on estate planning and wills. We certainly want to use our expert's expertise while she's here. Give us a call at 1-832-685-1025. That's 1-832-1025. And we're back. Thanks for joining us. This is Cheryl Crusoe, Managing Partner of Wealth Development Strategies. And welcome back to Let's Talk Money, the show that's all about becoming an independent woman. And today we have a very special guest. We have attorney Joy McNair of the McNair Law Group, and we're talking about wills and estate planning. So it's on all of our minds. We've had the loss of a very famous artist who's been near and dear to a lot of us. I know I loved his music, and it was sad to hear about the loss of Prince. And even more sad for someone who certainly had the finances, one might believe, to have the best experts on his team and have the best planning done in order for his assets to pass according to his wishes, and also to prevent the significant estate taxation that will occur on his estate. So, you know, what happens if a person dies without a will?
Well, if someone dies without a will, the estate has to go through a process that's called probate. And just to illustrate probate, I like to give a story. Just imagine that you're walking through your life, you have all of your assets, everything that you own, your home, your real estate, your home, clothes, jewelry, everything that you own, you have in your hand. You trip, you fall, you bump your head, and you become deceased. At that time, everything scatters. So we have to go through the probate process. We have to figure out what you own, what type of assets and property that you have, what it's worth. Then we have to pay off any creditors, any debts that you owe. We have to pay those off. And then we have to resolve any disputes. Sometimes there are disputes between creditors, between beneficiaries, or between creditors and beneficiaries. So we have to resolve those. And then we have to take the title in the property. We have to take the property out of the deceased person's name and put it into the name of the new owners, which are the beneficiaries. That's one of the biggest purposes of probate, is to change title and assets. When we're alive, we can simply do that by a contract. If we were to sell our home, there would be a closing, a new deed would be signed, and title in the home, the name of the home would be changed to the new owners.
Right.
When you're not alive, you cannot sign a contract, and nobody can sign one for you, not a spouse, a child, or a loved one. Only the court can change title, can take the property out of the deceased person's name and put it into the name of the new rightful owner. And so that's one of the biggest purposes of probate. And then, of course, after all of that's done, then we'll distribute the property to the beneficiaries. Whomever, if you have a will, whoever are designated in the will. If there's not a will, then of course it just passes by state law, okay. Which is the case that we're going through for Prince right now, where they have the opportunity, of course, beneficiaries are coming out of the woodwork trying to assert a right to the claim. We see 16th cousins surfacing in these type of cases, and everybody wants a piece of the pie, which is unfortunate because it could have all been prevented with a little bit of planning,
right.
Proper planning.
So if someone dies intestate?
Correct. Yes, that's what it's called, just intestate. That means dying without any written instructions about what's supposed to happen to your estate.
And so then your property is going to pass not according to what might have been your wishes, but according to the laws of that particular state.
Correct.
All right. And I would think that's a much more expensive and time-consuming process than just having a will.
Absolutely. It can be more expensive, time-consuming, and it's also a public process. Anybody can see what you owned and what your beneficiaries are going to inherit. And unfortunately, there are some people that do prey on widows and young beneficiaries that come into an inheritance. And so it's not necessarily the best way to pass on assets.
What about for someone who has children? How does a will play into the care of someone's children?
Absolutely. Well, for children, the laws do not allow a person under 18 to inherit property in their own name. So if a deceased person has any children under 18, then a guardian will have to be appointed to manage the child's property. And this court process, it's a courtroom process that's required. You have to have an attorney appointed to represent the interest of the child. There has to be regular accountings just to make sure that the money is not being mismanaged. And there's constant court supervision. The court stays in contact with the child, stays on this case until the child reaches 18. And then when the child reaches 18, everything is turned over to them to do as they please. And unfortunately, 18, for many children, is very young. They don't necessarily have the financial maturity to be able to manage those assets appropriately. And so we see a lot of them spend through their inheritance
very quickly.
Very, very quickly. Or they just take advantage of by scammers who are preying on children who have come into a windfall inheritance.
So if you have a parent who passes away, leaves a surviving parent and children, that decedent passed assets to a child, that surviving spouse who may be caring for the child has to go to a court-appointed guardian to ask for money?
Yes.
They take care of those children?
They do. Yes, there will be court supervision and that process. There are ways to avoid this through use of trust. Either a trust that's created in your will, that's called a testamentary trust, or through a standalone trust that's known as a living trust. And we use both of them a lot in my practice when we plan for families with young children. But whichever is the right choice really just depends on the type of assets and the goals and objectives of the family.
One of the questions I get a lot with divorcees is that I want to make sure that when I die, that I don't want my children to go to my ex-wife or my ex-husband. Will terminate someone's parental rights?
Yes, sir.
No, you cannot change the parental rights through estate planning. Typically, the living natural parent will be given preference when determining the custody or the guardian for the child, unless a judge decides that the child's living parent, that living with them is not in the best interest of the child. That's always the standard that the court uses, is the best interest of the child. However, it's still a good idea to name guardians either in a will, or I prefer to do it in a standalone document, because you don't know which parent is actually going to be the first to die. And so the second, the surviving parent would be able to name the guardians. And so it's a good idea for both parents to name guardians for any minor children.
Okay.
And also, I prefer to name guardians for minor children in the standalone document, as I mentioned, as opposed to only in the will, because the will is only effective after a person dies, and it ignores the possibility that a parent might not have died, but might become incapacitated or otherwise unable to care for themselves or for the child. So addressing these issues in a standalone document provides for the continued care of the child regardless of its due to death or incapacity. So it's a little bit more protective way.
Right. And I would guess that someone's will needs to be revised from time to time. I know when my husband and I first got married, we have three children, and we were just starting out. We said, okay, if something were to happen to the both of us, our children would inherit at 25. Mm-hmm. We figured they'd be out of college, have a little bit of sense, and they could handle their money. And as time went on and we became a little bit more fluent, and we always have these thoughts when we're on an airplane strapped in, sitting next to each other, and have the airplane conversations, and we thought, 25, if something were to happen to them and they blow it all, why don't we give them an opportunity to mature? And so we had our wills changed, and we said they'll get a third at 25, a third at 30, and a third at 35.
Okay.
And then just recently changed our wills so that our children's property stays in trust for life. And what's the advantage of that?
That's very important. You raised a couple of important issues. First is how often you should update your will. I can't tell you the amount of times I meet with clients who have children who are in their 50s and they're still naming guardians for their wills because they fail to update their estate plans. They do it once when their children are relatively young, and they just ignore their estate plan. So typically we like to have clients have a look at least every 3 to 5 years, because your lives change, your assets, your circumstances change, and the laws change. And so it's a good idea to at least have a look at it periodically, regardless of whether you ultimately make any changes. Now, you also raised the issue of whether to keep the assets in trust for life or to distribute it in stages. With the stage distributions, that's what we call, where you said a third, a third, and a third, that does allow the time for maturity, which is not a bad idea, but the more protective way is to leave it in a trust for the lifetime of your children, because it provides various asset protection from creditors in the event that somebody were to sue the child. Typically, they cannot go after assets in the trust, the children's inheritance, as long as it's structured properly. It provides protection from divorce. because it ensures that the assets are not commingled and don't become part of the marital estate or community property estate here in Texas. And so it's a very good way to provide that type of creditor protection and protection from divorce.
Very good. I think we have a caller. Hello.
Hi, hello.
Hi. Welcome to Let's Talk Money.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I have a question.
Sure.
It's regarding the parental parents not being involved in a child's life. For example, my younger sister, she has a daughter, my niece. She's under 2 years of age, and the father's not involved. And if my younger sister passed away first, I know that my sister would not want her daughter to go to him. He does not pay child support. He's not physically involved in a child's life. So you guys were talking about a will. If my sister puts together her will and specifically wants her daughter to go to our mother, in some way, shape, or form, would that suffice? Since the parental father is not involved from the beginning at all?
The court will look at all of those matters. They'll factor in all of that whenever they are determining the best interest of the child. And so they'll investigate the father and the father's background, as well as the grandmother, and then they'll be able to make their determination of the best placing for the child.
The better planning might be done ahead of time. Would you agree in terms of using maybe a family law attorney?
Yes, that is a family law matter to determine the custody issues. But again, it's really up for the court to decide those matters of custody.
I've seen situations where a parent will go ahead and relinquish their parental rights. And so you don't have those problems when the custodial parent does die. So you might have your sister talk to a family law attorney.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, ladies. I appreciate the information.
Great question. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. Joy, we're going to continue with some other questions. Is there any special planning that needs to be done for a child that has special needs?
Absolutely. When a person has special needs, they're often eligible to receive valuable government benefits, including Medicaid and Social Security. However, there are income and asset limits when receiving these are called means-tested benefits. And unfortunately, receiving an inheritance often puts the individual over the asset limitation. And for this reason, parents have been historically advised to disinherit a child with special needs. I personally think that that's a terrible idea because a child with special needs is least likely able to provide a comfortable life for themselves. And so instead, we guide parents to create what's called a special needs trust. Mm-hmm. And that's a trust that complies with the benefits laws and allows parents to leave an inheritance for a child with special needs without compromising their eligibility to receive benefits. And additionally, a well-drafted special needs trust will also allow parents to set up a team to manage the care of the child after they're gone. No one can replace the love and care that the parents provide for their children, but with a well-drafted special needs trust, you can put a team in place to ensure that all of these important matters are looked after and that there's an advocate in the child's care. You can be there for them, right?
And I know that's very important. I have a niece who's autistic, and so our families had to go through that planning. And that's the other area of specialty is the elder law.
Absolutely.
That you practice.
Well, you have enough for the other, yeah.
All right. If someone lives in Texas but has a piece of property in Louisiana or any other state, does that create some additional special planning that needs to be done?
Absolutely. Without proper planning, you have to have a probate in every state that you own property. That would include any vacation homes and certain types of timeshares. So an example you provided, you have property in Texas and you might also have property in Louisiana. You'd have to go through one full probate here in Texas to change the title and any assets, take the name out of the deceased person's name, put it into the name of the new beneficiary, and then you would also have to have another probate in Louisiana. Well, Louisiana doesn't have have probate like we do, but their version of probate, mm-hmm. to change title in those assets. And this can get costly depending on what state it is and what the state's requirements are.
Right. I have a client right now who received a blessing. She got inheritance from a brother-in-law, and some of it's in cash, but there is a residence in Florida, and there's also a residence in Maryland. So we're having to deal with these ancillary probates. How can someone prevent that?
One of the best ways to prevent having to do those ancillary probates is through a living trust. We do that most often when clients have property out of state. And the living trust allows you to create this entity you control, and you can change the title. You can transfer title to those and your assets to the living trust while you're alive. And that way they're already there. After you pass away, you get to avoid those probates. Because remember, we talked about the purpose of the probate is to transfer title in the assets. If you do that while you're alive, then you don't have to do that. There's nothing left for you to do after you're gone. And so we often draft the living trust and transfer the homes to that, the properties to the living trust.
That's excellent. Saves a lot of time and expense.
Absolutely.
Very good. Well, we're going to take a short break, but we want to take advantage of our guest expertise. Give us a call at 1-832-685-1025. Again, that's 1-832-685-1025. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Cheryl Cruzeau of Wealth Development Strategies, and you're listening to Let's Talk Money on Amazing 102.5, and our show is all about making you an independent woman. Our special guest today is our super talented sister attorney, Joy McNair, and we're talking about a very important part of your foundation, wills and estate planning. So Joy, what are some of the common mistakes? You've been in practice for some time now. What are some of the common mistakes that you see in your practice?
I could spend hours talking about the common mistakes,
okay.
But if I had to narrow it down, there's about five common things that I see reoccurring.
Okay.
And the first is not discussing important issues, like whether or not you would want to have the plug pulled. It's never pleasant to face your mortality or the possibility that you may one day not be able to care for yourself, but the impact of not doing so is often far greater than the few moments of discomfort that it takes to discuss these matters and to properly plan for them. And so I always encourage people to let their love guide them through that uncomfortable experience so that they can really make things as easy as possible for their loved ones after they're gone.
Right.
Also, another issue is not letting your family know that you have an estate plan or where they can find your assets when it comes time to administer your estate. Many people and many cultures are very private about these matters. But unfortunately, doesn't matter how well the plan is drafted, it has no value if nobody knows that it exists or where to look for it. And also, I can't tell you the stress that I see families after they lose a loved one, having to go digging and searching to identify the assets that the deceased owned. Unfortunately, sometimes assets go unclaimed because nobody knew that they existed or where to go to look for them. And so to remedy this, we always tell our clients, if you don't have to tell them what's in the estate plan, what it says, just let them know that you have it and to call your attorney who would be able to help you, guide you through that process of what to do and where to go. And also, we have our clients provide copies of all of their statements and all of their assets so we can provide an inventory for them and help them keep it up to date. And so that way they'll know what everything is, and we make sure that nothing goes unnoticed, unclaimed, when it comes time to administer. So the children would have no rights to view the parents' documents unless the parents authorize them to do so. But everyone would have the peace of mind in knowing that everything's been properly taken care of.
Really, that's excellent advice. I had the opportunity to work with a widow in her mid-50s. and her husband passed away. Went mm-hmm. outside to mow the lawn. She's preparing dinner. It got dark, and he never came in. Mm-hmm. And she called on her neighbor to go outside and check on her husband. And unfortunately, he'd had a massive heart attack and had died. And this woman went to pieces. Mm-hmm. I mean, not only the trauma of losing your husband, who in this case tried to talk to her during their long marriage about finances and what she needed to know, and she just resisted it. I don't want to talk about mm-hmm. this. But she spent the next week, which was terrifying, trying to piece together what they had. And fortunately, she remembered that he told her that if something ever happened, to look in a particular box in the house. And he had left in this box a letter of instructions and a list of all the accounts and the name of the attorney and everything. And so that gave her a tremendous peace of mind. And so when she came to us to do planning, we were ready to get started.
That's fantastic. I hear stories like that, not necessarily with the outcome that you shared. Often in many families, there's what's called the family CFO. We call it one family manages all of the finances and knows where everything is, pays the bills. And unfortunately, if that spouse is the one that's deceased first, the surviving spouse has no idea what to do, where the assets are and how to manage them. So it is very important to have some sort of inventory or plan of action for the surviving spouse to be
That's
able
right.
to continue
That's
forward.
That's right. She had a very loving husband to do that for her. Is there special planning needs if someone has a very large estate? Is there any additional planning that needs to be done?
Yes, but first let's define what we mean by a large estate.
Okay.
Currently, every individual is allowed to transfer $5 million without paying any estate taxes. We have an estate tax exemption that's at $5 million. So any individual can transfer to the next generation $5 million.
And before all of our listeners say, well, this will never apply to me, $5 million.
It can add up pretty quickly when you take into account the value of your home or any other real estate that you own, any life insurance, retirement plans, 401ks, IRAs, 403bs, any annuities, any of your assets, the property, the personal property, your clothes, your jewelry, your cars, that can add up for many people very, very quickly.
And it's interesting because people are living longer now. When we sit down and do retirement plans for our younger professional clients and we look at the amount of money they need to accumulate to be financially independent, say at 66, it's right around that number. It's a big number because people are living to 100 now.
Absolutely. And so there's $5 million that you can pass on. Individuals, married couples, a surviving spouse that's still living, they can use any of the deceased spouse, any amount of that exemption of the $5 million that the deceased spouse doesn't use. So married couples will often have $10 million. But again, with the combined assets, it's very easy for that to add up whenever you take into the factors that you just mentioned, the retirement and the other things that they need to live a comfortable life. And also there is also to avoid having to pay taxes, we discussed Prince and the hefty estate tax bill that he'll have. You'll have to pay taxes on any amount over that.
And what's
exemption.
That tax rate?
The tax rate is currently at 40%. You'll have to pay 40 cents on every dollar for estate taxes. But there's ways around that. If you properly do tax planning and plan your estate, you can avoid most, if not all, of those taxes. You can minimize them. And another issue that we see with larger estates, or even business owners or individuals that are in high-risk professions meaning professions that are likely to be sued, doctors, lawyers, and business owners, they would benefit from doing asset protection planning that provides a little shelter for them from creditors. We want to protect your business from your personal life, and we want to protect your personal life from your business.
Absolutely.
And we'd be able to do that with proper asset protection planning.
I remember 20 years ago, I had a gentleman come in overalls. And, you know, this is one of these, you can never judge a book by its cover.
See that often.
And he came in and sat down with me and said, had some notes written on the back of a napkin. And said, someone told me that, talked about estate taxes, and I need some help. So I said, let's go through everything you owned. And when he took into account the value of his farm and all the rental property that he had, though he didn't view himself as a wealthy man, he was over, his estate was well over the estate tax limit. And I know that this is a big problem for farmers.
Absolutely.
Or business owners. And what kinds of things do they encounter if you have a farmer or a business owner that their estate happens to be over that amount?
Well, one issue is there's liquidity issues.
Right.
In terms of paying the estate taxes. The value of the assets are over, but they don't have the cash necessarily to be able to pay for those estate taxes. And so often we do that through life insurance. We can provide life insurance to help provide the payment for some of those taxes. Another issue that we encounter is just who's going to manage the company. A lot of times we see for family businesses, even family farms, they don't survive more than two generations because there's fighting over who has control, who has the management. And so we call that succession. We like to do a proper succession plan, make sure that we have the taxes covered and that we can properly transfer the business to the next generation in terms of ownership and equity.
Yeah. When you talk about that, I think of my husband's uncle, who was a very successful dentist, who could have done the proper planning so he could have monetized the value of his practice that he spent 40 years building. And he simply just locked the door one day and went home and retired. So that succession planning that you bring up is very important.
Absolutely.
Very important. You know, one of the reasons I think people don't have their will done and some of the ancillary documents that you talked about is because they believe that doing estate planning is too expensive. So is it costly?
Well, implementing a proper estate plan, it does take an investment of time and money. Estate planning is not a one-size-fits-all approach, or at least it should not be when it's done appropriately. So you want to work with a professional, or whenever you do, it's really not the documents that you're paying for, but it's the professional guidance and skills that are required to assure that the documents are properly designed and drafted and executed, and that you have beneficiaries designated properly. That's another issue that I'll speak on that in just a moment, not having beneficiaries designated properly. So it does take an extraordinary amount of skill to accomplish these, and there's not any shortcuts, but the exact cost of the planning does depend on the size of the estate as well as the complexity of the plan and the skills of the attorney. And so it can really vary. It doesn't have to be an exorbitant amount, but it is an investment, but it's a worthwhile investment because the cost of not planning always far
exceeds the cost. Significantly higher. That's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
And I've seen the benefits that happen I've lived the benefits of when it gets done right. And I've also seen what happens, the effects and the impact that it can have on families when estates are either poorly planned or there's no plan at all. And so I'm an advocate that the most loving thing that you can do for your family is to have a proper plan and make things as easy as possible for them.
Yeah. One of the things I like to stress to my clients is that there's almost as much specialty in the law as there is in medicine.
Absolutely.
So you don't want to go to the PI attorney or...
who does wills on the side.
Yeah, who does wills on the side, but you really need someone who specializes in estate and probate, like our guest speaker. If someone has a small estate, Joy, is there any sort of streamlined process?
Well, in Texas, there's many different types of probate proceedings that are available to transfer property. The one that's selected depends on the size of the estate as well as the type of assets that are in the estate and whether or not there's a valid will in place. All of those determine which type of proceeding. But there are streamlined processes that are available for small estates. A small estate in Texas is under $50,000, excluding the home and a certain amount of personal property. So there are some ways to streamline it, but you do have to qualify for those types of procedures.
Okay. Well, we're speaking of smaller states, we have a lot of young clients who say, why do I need a will? I just have my clothes, I've got my car, they don't realize they've got benefits at work, they may have insurance at work. What do you say to that?
Well, there in general, there's a misconception of estates. We think of these large mansions, the lifestyles of the rich and famous, and
right,
those are the only type of people that have estates or that need estate planning. But everybody has an estate. There's estates of different sizes. An estate is just everything that you own. It's the clothes in your apartment if you don't own a home.
Right.
It's, like you said, your IRA at work, your bank accounts. Most adults have bank accounts. If you do not have a will, it would have to go through probate, or if you do not designate beneficiaries, have to go through probate simply for them to get your few dollars out of your bank account.
Right.
And so we all have various assets that need to be transferred. And we also, aside from just the will, as far as a comprehensive estate plan, what happens if we're incapacitated? If we're unconscious and we can't make decisions, if we can't manage our health care, we can't manage our finances. And so we need at least those basic foundational documents just to make sure that we're cared for.
So that comprehensive planning is a must for everyone.
For every adult, everyone over 18 should have some form of estate plan, even if it's just a modest one.
Exactly. You started to mention you want to touch on that a little bit for our audience.
Yes, that's one of the reoccurring mistakes that I see. A lot of people think that a will allows you to change the beneficiaries of property that passes according to beneficiary designations, things like life insurance and IRAs. But those type of assets, they pass only according to the beneficiary designations. And so oftentimes people forget to update them after a divorce or after a beneficiary is deceased. They think that they can just write in their will who it's to go to. But those types of life insurance, retirement assets, those type of assets pass according to the beneficiary designation regardless of what your will says. So it's very important to keep those up to date.
So it's important to coordinate those beneficiary designations with the estate planning.
Absolutely. I work hand in hand with my clients' financial advisors to make sure that all of the beneficiaries are coordinated so that the financial plan and estate plan can work in concert. They can work together.
What happens if you have a person that's a newlywed, for example, that might have their parents as a beneficiary under a life insurance policy?
Oh, that's a big one. That's usually a big discussion for newlyweds. They want to go ahead and get that updated. They would want to go ahead and make their spouse. Otherwise, if they... And for younger couples, oftentimes life insurance and retirement would be their larger assets.
Right.
So if they did nothing, then their spouse would be entitled to the very little bit that passes outside the beneficiary. They wouldn't get the bulk of their estate, which might be their intent, but it does not matter, again, what your will says. It passes according to what the beneficiary designations say. So it's very important to keep an eye on those. I advise having a look at those every 3 to 5 years, right at the same time that you take a look at your will.
Okay, very good. Well, we've covered a lot of great information. A lot of good advice, and Joy, I want to give our listeners your information. If they want to contact you, give them your number.
Absolutely. We can be reached at 281-407-9830. Again, that number is 281-407-9830. Or our email address is support@mcnairlawgroup.com. They can reach us there either way.
Very good. And we thank you so much for joining us today. And always for your financial planning needs.
I usually do the deposit slip and write void across.
And you can reach Kathy at 713-561-8110. So, thank you for tuning in today. Joy, that's great information.
Yes.
Have a great weekend. And be sure to tune in next Friday where our fabulous female advisor, Sloan Young, will talk about college funding. You don't want to miss it. Until then, ladies, let's be independent women.